This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Ready or Not is brought to you by Ergo Pouch, organic tog-rated sleepwear designed for babies and kids to sleep naturally. Wake up and start the day with the new Breakfast Club collection, a gorgeous limited edition range available to shop now. When Elkie Pascoe began looking into the ingredients into popular formula brands, she was horrified at what she found. And so, as a single mum of two, Elkie did what most would understandably find a little bit too big a hurdle to jump. She set out to make the best product that she could. And the journey that came before it and the one that followed as she's continued to grow Little Oak has been quite extraordinary. Since then, she's added a third baby to the fold and built a global brand. She's always worked a lot. She's never taken big chunks of parental leave, and in some ways, she regrets it, realising that she wasn't always able to stay present in amongst a very chaotic work schedule, which at one point meant building a brand, working, and solo motherhood. But would she change anything? Probably not. Here, we talk about how we wholly underestimate how much pressure we're all under, how a particularly vulnerable financial situation set a fire within her to never need to rely on anyone else for money again, and why it's the mental load and the moving parts around motherhood and career that actually make trying to do both so challenging. This is an incredible story from someone that never gave up. I'm Lucinda. This is Ready or Not. And here is the magnificent and magnetic Elkie Pascoe. Elkie, I want to take you back to launching Little Oak in 2016 as a single mum. Your product is just about to go to market. You have the financial pressures of being a parent, but I'm sure there's also a lot of excitement there. You've built this incredible product. What do you recall most about just that moment before pushing live?
You know, I felt equal amounts of stress and equal amounts of excitement. Of course, I started Little Oak as a single mum with very little money, and I put everything I had into it. But what I recall vividly was the day that I walked into the warehouse and saw all our products on their pallets and in their boxes. And I remember thinking, wow, oh my goodness, this is actually a reality. And I went around the corner and had a bit of a cry, and I called my twin sister and got all excited with her. So immense. I was very proud of myself that I'd got that far. But, you know, I think there was a huge amount of obviously just running on adrenaline, a lot of stress, a lot of excitement because, you know, I was at that point Elkie everything, Elkie manufacturing, Elkie, you know, marketing, Elkie capital raising, Elkie everything. So you didn't really have time to sort of in those days to sit and kind of think about much. You were just moving to the next thing. And that was really kind of all I kept focusing on, was that I couldn't let this fail. I had nothing if it didn't work. And, you know, I had two children and a roof. I had to keep a roof over the head and food on the table. So, you know, all I just kept thinking, I just have to get up tomorrow and do something else, keep moving this business forward. And that's kind of what kept me going for the first couple of years whilst managing another job as well, I might add, you know. So it was a busy time.
I cannot wait to find out how you actually did all of that. I'm exhausted just thinking about it and also incredibly inspired. But I want to know what came before. What did career life look like for you before Little Oak and also before motherhood?
So I used to work in healthcare and pharmaceuticals. Originally, way back when, I was in communications, but you know, I was always an aspiring pediatrician and never made the grades when it counted. So cut a long story short, I found myself in healthcare and pharmaceuticals, which I loved. And I traveled around the world with it, and I lived in Singapore running a firm over there. But, you know, I kind of woke up one day and thought, if I keep doing this, I'm going to go to an early grave. And, you know, there were a few personal issues going on in terms of my family and marriage and what have you. And I came back to Australia with my kids and I thought to myself, oh my God, I've really got to change something up here. You're either going to go back and do that medical degree that you've been threatening to do, which I knew was a stupid thing to do with two young children, or you start something with children and throw your passion and your commercial experience into that. So it didn't come to me overnight, the idea of Little Oak. That sort of wound itself into fruition after, with Freddie's health conditions and issues, that I sort of then landed on, you know, creating an infant formula company. And I suppose in many ways, I always felt like a bit of a sort of let myself down by not getting into medicine. But starting Little Oak has been significantly more satisfying in a way because, you know, I've been able to help millions of children and millions of families. And perhaps, you know, in medicine, I maybe been able to help 1,000 or so, but really proud of making that big jump at that point, as scary as it was, you know, with two young children and no financial support anywhere. So yeah, it was an interesting time.
What a journey. How did you feel about the idea of motherhood, especially how it intersected with career and having a career before you had your own children? Did you think much about it?
No, do you know, I didn't. And this is the interesting thing. Do you know, even I think my previous, you know, jobs that I had before kids were largely kind of people of my age. There weren't a lot of working mums, do you know, and the ones that were working mums, they worked as just as hard as we did, do you know? So you never really appreciate a working mum until you are one. And which is why now, you know, we're so passionate about supporting working mums or mums trying to get back into the workforce after having babies. Because my goodness, you know, it's a massive steep learning curve and it's a huge challenge each and every single day. So yes, I didn't have that awareness then, but now it's front and center in every, literally every discussion we have at Little Oak now.
So you're pregnant with your first baby. You're on quite, it seems like quite a corporate high-flying career trajectory. How did you feel when you were pregnant and how did you feel about that imminent shutting of the laptop when that baby would come?
Well, interestingly, with Olive, I worked up to the day before she was born. And then with Freddie, I worked to the day he was born. And I was doing emails, shutting the laptop as I was heading out to the hospital. So, yes, I mean, listen, I think it was a joyful time in terms of knowing that I would have some time off, you know, to enjoy the baby. But I didn't also know what that was going to entail, do you know? And I think every new mum can probably attest, you know, you suddenly go from having a job and getting up in the morning and having a shower when you want to have a shower and going to work as much as you might hate it, coming home and you have your routine. When you have a baby, of course, there's no semblance of routine at all. Just as like, you might be able to get out of your pajamas in 2 days' time. You might have a shower in 4 days' time if you're lucky, do you know? And I've just relived that whole experience with Hugh, do you know? Like, I don't think I've showered. When was the last time I showered? 3 days ago. Oh my God, I need to get my act together. But it was, do you know, so much joy. But I also then went back to work quite soon with Olive 5 months and then with Fred 4 weeks, because I realized that actually to be a better mum, I actually needed the stimulation. I wasn't great with the having nothing to do each day, do you know? So yeah, I decided that was probably the best course of action. And you know, sometimes I look back now and perhaps I regret that I didn't spend, I wasn't more present for the kids, particularly then after I started the company, because I really wasn't that present, do you know? You know, that's probably one of the challenges with starting your own company with young children. But nonetheless, you know, would I change anything? Probably not.
Hindsight, I mean, always tricks us, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? It's a little cheeky friend that we have. But no, listen, it was great. And I adored being able to juggle, you know, being able to juggle my kids and work and that stimulation. It was the mental load and the extra piece of coming home and keeping the house together that was probably the hardest piece of all of that equation, you know?
It's interesting. The further along I get, the more I reflect on the fact that it's not sort of the work itself that's hard. It's all of the things around it and getting to your desk at 9 a.m. Has that been your experience?
Completely, completely. And, you know, I think as women, we're naturally, you know, we're always sort of 3 steps ahead of everybody else. You know, we're thinking, okay, we've got this and we've got that, and you're multitasking daycare and lunches and this and that and work and this and relationships. And we just take on so much. And I really, you know, think we wholly underestimate how much pressure we are actually under, not just as mums, but also as, you know, working mums as well. Like, it's just, yeah, there's a huge amount going on in our head. I don't know how, as I'd love to just study the female brain and how it must expand and contract over
and
the course of...
And how it doesn't explode. Like, how does it not physically explode in front of us?
I know. Sometimes I think, what? And I think, and men, you know, it's hilarious. They're like, well, I'd managed to do this one thing. You're like, oh, my gosh. Like, we have got...
If you knew what was in my head.
If you knew what was going in my head, you know. But yes. Anyway, I think we've... As women, we, you know, we can achieve a lot, and, you know, we put ourselves under that enormous pressure to be the best mums and best at work and best in relationships. So, and I don't see that changing anytime soon, but I certainly do think it's fabulous that we've got the discourse around this, you know, talking more about the pressure that working women and stay at home mums are under as well, you know, just juggling it all.
Oh, there's so much juggling, too much juggling going on. Talk to me about your two return to paid work experiences. So you said, I think that it was the 5-month mark the first time around and sooner the second time around. Talk to me about how you returned to work, what sort of role you returned to, and how things might have changed for you in the workplace and at home.
Well, I returned in both instances back to consulting roles, so working into companies, not as a full-time paid employee. So in a way, I was afforded a little bit of flexibility because you're not a clock on, clock off employee. So, you know, but I was also probably managing, you know, I had a couple of clients at the time, so I was juggling across all of those. But yeah, I think it was like anything. You just kind of had to survived, you know, and the kids. I was fortunate with Olive and Freddie that I had a wonderful mother-in-law who played a really close role and supportive role in you know, taking them and looking after them. So that was wonderful and remain eternally grateful for that. But yeah, you know, I think it's just it was a hard old slog that I don't think you really appreciate until you look back at it and go, wow, I actually survived that. We all survived it, you know, just day in, day out, just keep on moving. As my Irish mother says, you know, excuse my language, but bum in, tits out, you know, just pull on your big girl knickers and get on with it.
Keep moving.
Yeah.
You reflect on it differently now because in the time, it's almost like that working in the business versus on the business thing. It's like we're so busy working in motherhood and working in our jobs that we don't really look at the bigger picture. Do you reflect more now on how the hell you made that all happen than you did in real time?
Lately, yeah. You know, I look back on those times with Olive and Freddie, you know, and I would have to take their school holidays and things, you know, I'd have to take them to go and stay in like a little holiday park thing so that I could work and they could, you know, sit by the pool or go to the kids club or something. And they felt like they were having a holiday, but you know, I wasn't ever really mentally there. You know, I was working the whole time. I'd be like, you know, just 5 minutes, just give me a minute. Just let me do this. So I do look back on that now and sort of think, God, I probably wish I'd been more present, like I said before, but you know, I didn't really have the option, you know, I had to keep pushing through, you know, in a way now, I think, as I've, you know, read a lot of the time, it is a legacy that you pass on to your children. You know, I've got both my kids now, you know, one have started like little businesses or little, you know, online things and side hustles, and they know about marketing and they know about how to, you know, put a product together and websites and how to, you know, do pricing and stuff. And I think that's actually very cool. So, you know, and they're really grateful for that. I think I've been fortunate enough to have a second bite of the cherry with Hugh much later in life and with the kids a bit older and the business at a different position now, where even though I'm working, I could still, you know, I could take the time out and go and sit on the ground with him for a couple of hours and just play with the ball or take him to Gymboroo and just turn off my phone, you know. So I think I really made a conscious effort with Hugh to make sure that, you know, he came first versus the other way around.
And in amongst when it was just the two children and Hugh wasn't here yet, you go through a separation. I'm interested to know what that was like as a mum, both from the emotional point of view, but then also the logistics, because of course it adds a lot of extra challenges in finances, in logistics, in when you have the kids, you're the sole carer and there's no one else to watch them while you're in the shower or anything like that. I'm really interested to know what that was like and what you learned.
Gosh, yes. Yeah, that was near like childbirth, I think, those first couple of years, because it was really tough and it was really messy and it was really horrible, to be honest with you. So in a way, you know, what did I learn? Gosh, I don't know, that you just had to survive. I tried to, you know, make sure that when the kids were with me, you know, that obviously I had to work, but that I was, you know, between the, you know, the hours of 9 and 3, I would work. But when they're at home, try and spend that time with them, try and carve that out. And then when they went over to my ex-husband's, you know, I went, you know, 6 gear into working overdrive and traveling. So to try and carve that out, but that didn't happen immediately. Do you know, I made a huge number of errors in terms of, you know, work and kids all getting messed up in terms of timings and priorities. So, but yeah, it was later on into the company that I went, right, you know, I have the flexibility here to be mum between these hours, CEO between these hours, and then CEO on, you know, ludicrous mode on the week when the kids aren't here. So, you know, it became important for me to kind of continue to run that schedule, which I still do to this day. Do you know, like when the kids come home now at 3 p.m., like it's down tools, like no more work unless I have to do stuff at night. So, yeah, I mean, you're learning all the time, you know, all the time. But, you know, I am, as I said before, significantly more aware and conscious of being present for the kids because, you know, Olive's 13 now, Fred's 11. I mean, that time since I started the company is just literally flown by. And I know that's a sentiment that many parents hold, but, you know, I mean, there are just
times. It's a cliche for a reason.
It is a cliche for a reason. I just don't remember periods of our life together because I was so stressed with the business.
Something interesting when you become a parent, which I guess should seem incredibly obvious, is that all of a sudden you are that figure that someone looks up to for comfort and all of those things. And when I'm with my parents, in a lot of ways, I still feel like the baby. So what I'm interested to know is how did you deal with the more emotional side of going through that? Because that's such a big thing to go through. But then you have to be strong and able to care for these little people in amongst looking after yourself and maybe grieving a relationship or at least just grieving what you went through in the process. How did you deal with the emotional side of it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think my children have probably seen me cry more times than they've swapped socks. Do you know? Like I'm a classic crier. I get emotional and they have worked through that. And I have incredibly compassionate children as a result now, I think, do you know, and very emotionally aware children.
Yeah. But isn't that a gift? Like we've always been taught to keep our emotions from our kids, but that's really, as we know, as I guess parenting methods get a bit more modern, we know that that's not really helping them at all.
That's right. You don't need to, robots aren't going to create beautiful children. So listen, it was hard. Do you know what was going on at that time and trying to keep it all together, trying to, you know, there was that period of having to come back from Singapore with the kids and trying to work the job back in Singapore while having the kids here and trying to work out custody and trying to work out, you know, the finances and then walking away and realizing that actually you have no money. It's just been chewed up in legal fees. So it was, you know, but again, you don't really have, you know, you don't have any option. And, you know, I always remember a time, and I say this, you know, when I'm recounting Little Oak and, you know, some of those moments where it was really difficult. Like, you know, there are points where I had no money. Like I went to go and buy my kids food and I had no money in my account. And I rang my ex-husband. And I said, can I just have $50 because, you know, I need to buy the kids food. And he came around and put 2 sausages on my front doorstep for my 5 and 3-year-old, or maybe a bit older than that, so I just can't remember the details specifically. And that galvanized me. I thought, how disgusting, number one, how dare you? But it galvanized me. I thought, I will never be in that position ever again, do you know? And that actually, I worked, I think, harder than ever before after that particular day, because I thought, I will never leave my kids in this situation ever again. So I don't know. I'm not sure what happened in the following week after that, but yeah, I mean, it definitely spurred me to make this a big success. And, you know, I remember that that memory every now and again. And I think this is why you're working as hard as you are still, even after all these years, do you know? And I'll keep going until, you know, I've got a situation where my kids don't have to worry about money and I don't have to worry about money and things. So yeah, a lot goes into a business when you're a startup, and particularly a startup as a solo mum, with no, you know, no family support or anything. So not this is supposed to sound like a sob story by any stretch.
No, it's inspiring, if anything. What a journey.
It's what you got to keep doing when you're a mum, do you know? You just got to, as I said before, keep going. Big girl knickers on and you keep on trucking forward.
I'm interested to know when that separation occurred and your children wouldn't have been in your care for, I'm not sure how long a period of time, and I'm not sure how often. So maybe you can tell us that. I'm interested to know when you had that solo time. Obviously, you've mentioned that you worked really hard in those hours. But what does that relationship with me time look like as a solo parent? Do you start off just working really hard and then eventually get comfortable with carving actual time for rest? Or how did you use that time?
I don't think I ever rested. I'm still not sure I still do to this day. Rest is like, oh, that's a novel concept, isn't it?
What does rest mean?
What does rest mean? No, I used that time to run faster on reflection. You know, I was on more planes. I traveled further. I went and met, you know, as many people as I possibly could to make sure this business got off the ground. You know, so yeah, downtime probably look like, you know, walking or running in the morning. I was running back then when I hadn't busted my knees entirely and, you know, walking at night. But, you know, it's really hard to go from a situation, and there's lots of families out there that know this, you know, intimately, where your kids are around you 24/7. And you know what you complain about? You're like, oh, I couldn't wait for a break. I just need a break from the kids, to then them not being there. And that's sort of forced upon you, and the emotional, God, heartbreak that causes, you know, like.
That's what I'm imagining, like getting comfortable with that quiet would be really, really challenging, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I traveled. I traveled to make that week quick, just to like, so I could hop on a plane on the Monday, I'd be back on the Saturday, and then I only had one more sleep or two more sleeps and my kids were home again. And that's kind of how I ran it, you know, and it didn't. And in a way, I still do. I still, you know, Hugh's here now, but I still kind of travel, even those still the weeks that Olive and Fred are not here, just so that week will pass quickly.
And so let's get more to the nuts and bolts of starting Little Oak. I think it was Fred's feeding and allergies that might have spurred you on to create this product. I'd love to hear all about that, the inspiration behind it, the journey you went on, and actually getting that product out. Like, how does one even start a formula brand?
Well, and why would you start a formula brand? I always remember a gentleman in New Zealand saying to me, why did you start a formula company? Like, it's the hardest thing you possibly could have done. And I was like, you know, I actually didn't know what I didn't know. I was just this blind.
That's the only way we do anything, right?
Yeah. So Fred had a terrible skin reaction to on his body that obviously I went to the doctor and they were, you know, the typical kind of, oh, it's stick this steroid on it and stick him in this acid type bath thing. And I was like, this is just so crazy. I cannot believe this is your only advice. So I did one or two things. One is I started washing him with goat milk skincare wash, and that seemed to like nearly help it. And I was like, well, this is intriguing. Then the second thing I did was like, well, this is clearly caused by something that I'm, you know, internally that he's irritated inside. So let's see what we're feeding him. And of course, at the time he was on formula, and I looked at the ingredients and was horrified by the ingredients. I then sort of looked back on my journey with Olive, because she was on formula from about 5 months as well, mixed feeding. And she was on the same journey, but I just didn't pick it up. You know, she had reflux, she had terrible sleeper, the whole thing. And you just put it down first time mum that, oh, this is normal. Oh, they've got colic. Oh, they got reflux. Oh, they're not sleeping well. You know, just assume that's just how it all goes. And I used to fight women in the shelves for like the organic. And I look at the ingredients now and I'm like, how in God's name did I put this into my children? But anyway, nonetheless. So yes, I started looking at everything. Horrified by what I saw on the can on that particular day. And then as I was obviously still working my other jobs, wherever I was traveling, I would look at the cans in the supermarkets and chemists, and I realized that actually all of the infant formulas were the same. They were just a variation of more rubbish on more rubbish chemical cocktails. So I then started to realize, like, well, this is just crazy. How do we continue to sell this and give this to our babies?
If you're a tired parent, you know how tricky it can be to figure out what your little one should sleep in, especially when the temperature's changing. That's where Ergo Pouch comes in. They've made it easier with their Safe Sleep approved range, offering organic sleepwear for kids from newborn to 6 years old.
What I love most is it takes the guesswork out of dressing my kids for sleep, especially in those early days where the temperature of your child at nighttime basically lives rent-free in your mind. Plus, I just love their prints and the longevity of these products. Before I even purchased from ErgoPouch, I received so many quality hand-me-downs from my sister-in-law. So you just know that they last. And now, with the end of summer in sight, Ergo Pouch has launched their Breakfast Club collection. Two cute, fun prints inspired by your favourite breakfast treats. The first one is Petite Pretzel, a boulangerie-inspired print with cute pretzels on a blue base. And Bon Appetit, featuring a colourful mix of breakfast favourites like eggs and croissants on a neutral cream base. Wake up with the new Breakfast Club collection at ergopouch.com.au.
When I was in the UK, I started looking at manufacturers and how it was made. And I had a conversation with a gentleman in the north of England. And he said to me, you realise that the taurine that goes into most of the infant formulas is the same taurine that's in Red Bull. And I was just like, well, this is where we press go now, Elke, because not only do you have an opportunity here to do something better, you now have a responsibility to do something better. So I then went, right, we're going to get cracking this. I then went.
How old are your kids at this exact moment, just for a bit of context?
Gosh, they must have been maybe a couple of years on, so 6 and 4 maybe at this stage. I think the numbers start to get a bit hazy now. So I figured out what best looked like. I started to shape up some plans around, you know, I wanted to look at goat milk because of the reaction, the great reaction that Freddie had had with it on, as a skincare, and then realized actually it was a fabulous source and protein for infant formula. I then, you know, was tiptoeing around it and thinking, am I going to do this? I went, you'll laugh, actually, I went down to Williamstown and in Victoria. And as I was walking down the street, I was talking to my twin sister, that's right, and she said, oh, there's a really good clairvoyant down there, Elke, and you should go and see what she has to say. So I went into this randomly. I mean, whether you believe in this stuff or not, I, you know, it's up to you, but went into this lady and they had one appointment left. Come back at 12 o'clock, this guy said. I said, okay, I'll be back. I got back there at 12, walked into this back alley with this lady who was eccentric looking woman I've ever seen. She sat me down and immediately just started talking to me. You've been through a lot of unrest. You've had a lot of pain. She just nailed the kids and the separation stuff immediately. Then she started going, you're going to start a new business. And she said, "It's you can't find the main ingredient." At that time, I couldn't find the goat milk. She goes, there will be blue in the logo. And I'll tell you another story, how I got to the blue, the little blue. And she said, you won't sell it in big supermarkets. No, she said it's a really high premium product. And she said, there's a tree in the name. There's a tree. And I was tossing up at that point between Little Oak and Capra Kids. And she just went on this thing. And she said to me, it will take you so long to build this company, much longer than you can possibly imagine. She said, but keep going. She said, because it's going to be a huge success. Keep going, keep going, keep going. And then she folded up her books or whatever she had, lit a cigarette and walked out. I wrote it all down. I still have it here. I'm still too nervous to open up the card again. But anyway, yeah, so that was, and, you know, I kind of from there went and immediately sat outside, wrote everything down. She said, registered Little Oak website, registered, you know, all social media handles, and off we went. And I started having conversations in Australia about manufacturers, and then no one wanted to speak to me because I didn't have $10 million in bank. You know, I'm sure the universe was looking after me because by some stroke of luck, I bumped into someone who had really great relationships in New Zealand. And because I was looking to do something different, you know, I didn't want to be the same rubbish in a different can. I wanted to do change the process. I wanted to have all natural ingredients. I didn't want to do China. They all thought I was A, mad, and B, obviously interesting project to work with. So I got a huge amount of support from everybody in New Zealand and still do to this day. And that's why we're, you know, Little Oak, proudly milked and made in New Zealand, because they really supported me.
When you say you got support, do you mean that's where you raised your capital? I'm so interested. No. How does someone actually do that?
No, I didn't raise capital there initially. No, it was the factories that were willing to take a chance on me. You know, it was the milk suppliers that were willing to take a chance on me. And at the time, you know, I had, for the clairvoyant, couldn't find the milk supply. And at that point in time when I started the company, all formula, all goat milk, or large amount of it was actually, even the New Zealand made formulas for goat milk, as small as they were at the time, were still, the goat milk was still coming out of Netherlands, out of one company. Wow. So I flew to Spain because I tried to get this guy on the phone, and I flew to Spain and I arrived because I got lost, ironically. I got a police escort up to this man's building. Like the stories I could tell you. So this guy thought I was someone like, you know, hoi polloi as I rolled
up. Please talk to me.
I'm here with my little Fiat Punto that cost me like, you know, 10 kind of euros a day because I had no money. And I said to him, listen, he said, you're the only person that's hopped on a plane to come and see us. We'll give you milk. And I said, oh my God, this is fantastic. So anyway, that's how that all started originally. We now obviously have our farms in New Zealand, so we're, you know, all fresh New Zealand milk. But, you know, I got the factory, you know, I met a wonderful person who helped me with the brand, you know, that didn't charge me a lot. And it just sort of, I don't know, all the bits just started to come together to that, as I said earlier, to the day when I walked into the warehouse and there was a whole 10,000 cans of, you know, Little Oak. The interesting thing was, of course,
did you fund it yourself to begin with?
That first, yeah, all my own money. Which is why in the subsequent years I had no money. Yes. And of course, you know, those 10,000 cans when we launched them had canola oil in them, and I hated the canola oil, but there was no other option at the time. So when we launched, and I went to Richie's, and the beautiful buyer there, Jackie, who was the head health buyer, she rang me and she said, listen, I just want you to know you have the best informer in the world. She goes, but I don't like the canola. And I said, you know, I don't like the canola either. And I said, have you got an option of what I could use? And she said, why don't you look at flaxseed oil? And I said, flaxseed oil, good Lord, I'd never even thought of that. I said, okay, I'll make you a commitment. If it will work, meets the regs, if I can find a supplier, and three, if I can use it in the manufacturing process, I'll change it automatically, immediately. Anyway, all those things lined up. So I actually took those first 10,000 cans, of which by that stage I'd probably only sold, I don't know, 800 cans. And I said, right, get rid of them. We're doing a whole new batch with flaxseed oil in them. So those canola cans,
Did the people you were working with think you were mad?
Completely and utterly mad. They're like, what are you doing? And I was like, no, this is the right thing to do. And I remember at that point I had actually secured one of my first ever, my first investor, Graham, who's still an investor today. And I remember having a talk with him while I was in taking the kids up to Byron Bay just to sit in a caravan park. And he was like, this is crazy, Elkie, but I can understand why you're doing it. I said, just stay with me on this one. So yeah, it was a big decision because then we had to roll in a whole lot more cash. But, you know, we're the first in the world to use cold pressed flaxseed oil from New Zealand and no canola and no palm oil. So I'm really proud of that decision, but potentially stupid as it is looking back on it.
So in the days after launching a brand, what happens? What are you doing? How are you getting PR? How are you getting sales? What's your plan from there? Like, it's one thing to get to launch date, but to grow it into what you've grown it into today is something quite else.
I think I was kind of fortunate having come from a comms background and having a healthcare and pharmaceutical background, because formula is the closest thing to a, you know, pharmaceutical product on a supermarket shelf, right? And this is where a lot of people went wrong, in my opinion, when they all came on and thought they were going to make millions and billions of dollars in China, because they believed that they could market infant formula like they do a can of Coke. So, you know, having had that comms and marketing background with the healthcare experience, you know, I was able to sort of, I suppose, navigate a kind of a plan that would get it out there that cost me no money. But I think the thing that was most probably persuasive was the fact that I had a real vision around the brand. Do you know, I didn't want to be an infant formula company. I wanted to be much more than that. Didn't want to look, behave, act like a standard, boring, you know, of the standard, you know, Nestle or what have you. I didn't want it sterile. I wanted something that mums could actually feel warm about, could trust, knew that there was a, you know, a mum behind the brand that had actually done all the thinking with for them and had created the best. So yes, how did that then play out? Well, I really only had social media and a website. You know, our first website cost me $5,000 and it held me well for like first four and a bit years. Were so fantastic. And I met this wonderful girl, Jody, who still works for the business today. You know, she did all this wonderful stuff. I owe her my life because she just created this, took the brand concept that we had and just built this whole amazing journey. and remain forever grateful to her for that. But yeah, we just, you know, social media, website. I mean,
it sounds like it was like your parenting journey. You just kept at it. You just kept going. And it's hard to remember what it is now, probably, but you just kept going.
Yeah. And, you know, we did stupid things like, you know, invested a whole lot of money in a pop-up store because I went to, you know, it's so Elky Pasco, isn't it? But I went and had a meeting with Woolworths. This is back when, just as we just got the product off the line, and they were so dismissive and so horrible. And I said, right, well, I will never do business with these guys again. And I got told, if you don't get Woolworths, you will fail, Elky. And I said, watch me. So I think I went out the next day and said to Judy, give me a pop-up store. I want a pop-up. I want you to build me this amazing pop-up store, which she did. And I went and put it in the top six family baby Woolworths stores around New South Wales and Victoria and stuck a massive little like pop-up store out there.
Oh, that's so good.
For what purpose, Elky? Just to satisfy myself. But nonetheless, it did get us some really great brand exposure. And, you know, to this day, we do stuff with Woolworths. To this day, we still aren't doing anything on their shelves. And, you know, I hold true to that promise to myself that we've been successful without having to cut the cloth like everyone has in the same way.
Yeah. How does someone find an investor? I'm thinking of anyone listening that's in a startup or they've got an idea for a brilliant product. How do you secure investors? What's the magic there? Tell us.
Well, do you know what? There's actually more money out there than you think. You just have to tap into the right networks, do you know? And I think if you've got a startup, you know, you really need to find some of those friends and family first and then some of the angel investors, and then you grow into some of the more sophisticated high net worths, and then you might look into a, you know, private equity partner. But yeah, you just have to have conversations. You have to get out there and just talk to anybody. I mean, I talked to a lot of people before I got a yes, do you know? And I felt like, what am I doing here? This is just, everyone was like, oh, none of this makes sense. Look at your cash flows. You know, none of this makes sense. And I was like, yeah, you're right, because I have no idea how to do cash flow. But anyway, but, you know, you've got to really lean on your friends and family. And is there anybody you know? Can I go and chat to them? And that person then chats. And you have to literally, it's a full-time job, the capital raising piece in the beginning, do you know? And you've got to have a really sharp, smart presentation. Like you really do. Like it's, you got to put your best foot forward every single time. You got to be really clear and passionate on what it is you're trying to get off the ground and be able to articulate it. And then expect, you know, just a lot of no's before you'll get a yes.
Yeah. It's like the theme with you today for me has been that you just keep going until you get what you need and get what your family is going to need. So it's incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, you just keep punching through those walls, do you know?
Yeah, keep punching through.
And I would say that would be my advice to anybody who is listening. You can never give up, do you know? And it's interesting that clairvoyant, believe what you will, and your thoughts on, you know, that hocus pocus, some might say.
No, I'm into it.
But it was her words, you know, she said, just keep going. And you really just have to. And the reason you have to start a business that you're passionate about is because when times get really, 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 really tough and you think, I cannot do this anymore, if you're driven to a true purpose, you'll still want to get up every morning and do it, no matter how hard it is.
You've got to believe in it.
Yeah, you've got to really believe in it. Otherwise, you just give up, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm interested to know, what was the point when you thought to yourself, shit, I've got something here? Whether it was raising capital from someone that you really wanted, or it was hitting a certain amount of sales in a 24-hour period, what was a moment where things changed for you? This went from being something you were passionate about and that you took seriously but still felt small, to then being like, I own a full-on business here and we're going for it.
You know, that probably only happened just more recently, do you know? I mean, even when we got our private equity partner, which, you know, was a big milestone for our business, it's probably, well, we got our private equity partner and then COVID hit. So it was all panic stations on whether we would survive, and thank God we did. But yeah, no, it was probably only recently. And you know what? Yeah. It's probably just through conversations with people, because they're like, you just speak to people and people know Little Oak now. Do you know? Whereas people be like, yeah, Little Oak, where this, they're like, Little Oak. Like, I know Little Oak. Oh my God. Like, I spoke to a lady in F45 the other day. She's like, we sell Little Oak in our health food store. It's like, we cannot keep it on the shelves. You know, I was down with, you know, a camping trip with Fred just last week, and chatting to this lady in the pub. she was pregnant with twins, and we were chatting about don't judging and having a glass of wine while you're pregnant. I was like, no judgment here. And I said, oh, well, if you need some help, I have a, you know, formula company. If you need some formula, no. She was like, okay. And she said, oh, which one is it? And I said, Little Oak. I said, but best of luck, you know, and I sort of worked off to leave. And she came running after me. She's like, I know Little Oak. She goes, yes, we sell it at our pharmacy. It's like the best. It's the best. You know, yes, can I get some free stuff? I was like, of course, I'd love to send it to you. So, you know, it's that sort of recognition. You know, yeah. We had a distributor the other day and he was like, everybody's talking about Little Oak around the world. Like, and you're getting calls now. Can we take your product to this market? Can we take you? Whereas before you were knocking on 1,000 doors before someone even has a interest in having a conversation with you. But like, I just never gave up. I mean, it sounds wanky, but I just never gave up. You know, I was like, you will have a meeting with me. Otherwise I will badger you into like complete submission. So yeah, that, and I'm sure that was just like, whatever. And then I would always take, you know, for people that I thought would drink, I always took like kegs of beer and stuff, like warm them up with a bit of alcohol.
Bit of networking. I love it.
But no, yeah. So yes, I can't remember what the exact question was, but yeah, you just got to keep punching through each and every day. Never give up.
So something else that happened recently was that you added to your family. Hugh, I believe, is about 1 year old, or one year old, I should say. What's that been like, entering early motherhood again?
An absolute, like, unarguable delight. He is just beautiful. And I'm actually just watching him at the minute on the owlet, just to make sure he's still asleep. It's just been wonderful. Do you know, I think I honestly couldn't believe I was pregnant when I found out I was pregnant. I was like, it was like a teenage pregnancy. I rang my best friend and said, I think I'm pregnant. And she said, I'm coming round with wine. I said, you'd better come round with wine, quick as sticks. But listen, it's been wonderful. You know, a little bit older, had a big gap between, you know, Freddie was 10, so there's 10 years between the two of them. And it's just honestly the best thing that could have happened.
And what has making work work as a business owner, this time of a really established business, and this time with a really little baby or a newborn, what's that been like? Tell us about the challenges and the triumphs.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, he's been on more Zoom calls than probably any, you know, probably CEO. He's been on more planes. Hugh and I both went back to work at 4 weeks old. You know, we have been on, he's been on more flights than you can honestly imagine. Like, I hopped on another flight the other week and the hostess was like, oh, it's Hugh again. I was like, you know, you're doing a lot of travel with a baby when the hostess knows like, your
don't judge
name.
Me.
So yeah, I've just tried to really like bring him along on the, you know, with everything, and he's been a part of it. He's featured heavily in a lot of our campaigns for Little Oak. It's been wonderful from he's a free marketing tool in the sense that it's really reminded me what mums who have babies need. Like before, when I was running Little Oak, I was like, oh, I know what mums want. And I look at the stuff content-wise we were sending out. I was like, I was so out of touch. That's so ridiculous. Whereas,
well, you forget, you know, quickly, don't you?
Yeah. And like, you know, the girls at our marketing are like, oh, we're going to do this. I'm like, no. Mums don't want to know about that. We want to know about X, Y, and Z, you know? Yeah. And just like, this is so, yeah, it just really brings you right in the fold with all your mums who are in the trenches with you as well. And so, yeah, it's just been a joy across the board, from having Hugh to managing work to, and the value that he's really brought, you know, to how I make decisions at Little Oak.
Yeah. What's been your biggest achievement at Little Oak? And feel free to brag as much as you like.
Well, I'm really proud of a lot of things. Do you know, I'm really proud that we were the first certified infant formula, palm oil free formula in the world. You know, that was a huge undertaking. I didn't realize it was going to be so difficult when I set out to get the certification. I just assumed that you take out the palm oil and the oil blend and that was, you're done. But actually, certification requires you to be every single ingredient palm oil free. So that was huge. I literally trekked to Peru to find different ingredients because everything has palm oil in it. It's frightening. So that, you know, first in the world to be flaxseed, use cold pressed flaxseed, you know, to actually take our whole supply chain and move it into our from fresh model, you know, where we took fresh milk and only spray dried once instead of spray drying twice, you know, maximizing all that and protecting all the natural goodness. You know, that was a huge undertaking and one that people were like, why are you doing this? Because it was 2 years getting exact measurements from all the goats from this farm until we could turn over into our from fresh model. So huge amount of work, which we've been able to continue. and being recognized for that. You know, we were actually received the AFR Most Innovative Manufacturing Company last year, was it? Yeah, for that, which is phenomenal. And I was actually reflecting that last night, you know, the countdown, and we realized actually we were number one, we'd won. It was like, oh my God. But, you know, the most thing I'm actually proud of, and the thing that I just literally, my heart just kind of radiates, is when we get these, you know, emails or calls from mums, you know, just saying, listen, you have changed my child's life. My child was covered next but didn't sleep. And now look at my child, you know, clear skin, bubbly eyes, sparkly eyes again. And I love getting on the phone and ringing our mums back, you know, if they've had a hard time or that something's gone wrong with their little low cord. Like I will call them and say, listen, and I love it. Like I just adore that interaction that I can have with mums and seeing all the pictures of the kids growing up and the new then little siblings coming through the family. And I just think this makes all the hard work and sleepless nights worth it.
You've made something very clear, and that's that I thought you were going to mention sales or targets hit, but you've just made it very clear to me that a lot of the success of good business is having a proper purpose. It's not the bottom line, although that helps. It's actually solving a problem for people. But with that said, I want to know, can you tell me how many cans you've sold?
Gosh, millions now, thank goodness. I don't know the exact number though. I'd have to come back to you on that one, but yeah.
Over a million cans is no small feat. Do you think the Elkie that launched Little Oak on that old website on day one could have ever believed that she would have sold over a million cans worth of this product?
No, probably not. Probably not. I don't think I knew what the quantum would look like, and I don't think I knew what really success was going to look like. Do you know, like I said, you're in the trenches, you're just looking to get through the next day. So no, and it's now that, you know, we've got the team, it's actually the cans. Yes, that's a good indicator. I'm really proud of, but you know, it's actually also the mums that we help, the team. Like, you know, I look around the team and our team calls and our, you know, quarterly catch-ups with our team, and we've got 22, 23, 24, I don't know, team members now. And I think, wow, this is so cool. Do you know that this company started with, you know, me, and now it's gone to this 25 amazing, passionate, phenomenally talented people who every single one of them I adore, and all working towards the same thing. So that's, yeah, I mean, that's kind of, that's what really makes me happy and proud, and didn't actually ever think we'd get to this. And, you know, hopefully by the next couple of years, that'll double again. So lots more work to do, I always say. You can't afford to sit still.
It's such an incredible journey that you've been on. Before I let you go, what does the year ahead look like for you as a mum and a business owner?
Yeah, as a mum, listen, as always, the same thing. Just focus in on my kiddos and make sure that they are happy and content, and making sure that I'm there to help them and be present, you know, not to miss a netball game or a rugby game, or, you know, with Hugh, make sure I'm there to pick him up from daycare on time. So really excited by that. And also the journey that the kids are on with Hugh, you know, really, you know, enjoying having a little brother that they, you know, Olive is nearly the sort of, she calls herself the mum. She's like, I'm the mother, move over. It's a beautiful thing. From a work perspective, listen, we have so many more children and families to reach across the world. So I'm really excited about the new markets that we're opening up. Really excited about pushing the boundaries around how we can do this business. We just became the first infant formula company in the world to deliver infant formula via drones. We got told I could never do it, but we just launched it back in December down in Victoria. So more to come there. And then obviously rolling that out to the point where it's not a novel thing, it's a standard thing. Such a great thing. You should see it. You know, you can stand on your back step and this drone flows in and just drops the
package
down on your front doorstep. Yeah. I mean, so it was a harebrained idea that I had years ago. And the next iteration of that will be a stork, like a stork drone that comes in and delivers your formula like a baby. So that's my next thing. But anyway, we're halfway there. And then really it's looking at, you know, more ways of just making the world happier, easier, and creating even better products. And you can hear Hugh in the background there. I'm really sorry.
Perfect timing. Talk about making work work. I'm going to let you go now. If people want to find Little Oak online, where can they go?
Yes, absolutely. Come and visit us at www.thelittleoakcompany.com.
Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks again, Lucina. Great chatting with you.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod.
That's it for today. We'll see you next time.